Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge, upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
It's early March 2022 in Utah. Outside, the mountains still hold on to winter, snow packed into the ridges, the air thin and sharp in that way it only is at elevation. Inside a large home in Camas, three little boys are fast asleep. And inside the master bedroom of that same house is a father who will never wake up. By morning, there will be sirens cutting through the mountain quiet. By afternoon, there will be questions. A year later, there will be an arrest. And somewhere in between all of that, grief, suspicion, headlines, there will be a children's book about loss written by the mother of those boys. A book about a father who dies and watches over his children from heaven. This is the story of Corey Richens and the accusation that she murdered the father of her children, Eric Richens. I'm Mel Barrett, and this is The In Between. Before there is a death investigation, there is a marriage. Corey and Eric married in 2013. They built a life that, from the outside, looked aspirational. Utah mountains, investment properties, entrepreneurial energy, three young kids, the kind of life that photographs well. But prosecutors would later allege that by late 2021 and early 2022, the financial reality behind that image was far more complicated. According to charging documents, Eric controlled most of the household finances. And prosecutors say he began discovering that Corey had taken out loans and entered into real estate transactions without his knowledge. One deal in particular becomes central in the state's narrative. A multi-million-dollar property purchase allegedly financed by leveraging existing assets without Eric's consent. That matters, not because debt equals murder, it doesn't. Financial stress is not homicide. Couples fight about money every single day and no one ends up in a courtroom. But investigators frame the timeline this way. Mounting real estate pressure, undisclosed loans, alleged defaults, growing marital tension, and then one of the most legally explosive details. Eric allegedly changed his life insurance policy, reducing what Corey would receive in the event of his death. When I read that, I paused. Insurance changes are quiet. They don't come with drama. They don't come with sirens. But inside a courtroom, they speak pretty loudly. The state's theory is clean and linear. Financial pressure, insurance change, escalation. The defense sees something else entirely. Ordinary marital strain retrofitted into a motive after tragedy. And this is where the in-between lives. Because motive stories are seductive. They make chaos feel orderly. They give jurors something to hold on to. But juries are told over and over, motive is not an element of murder. Intent is. Proof is. Evidence beyond a reasonable doubt is. Still, the money becomes the backdrop to everything that follows. And this is where the story gets even more complicated, because while prosecutors are building a case around finances, fentanyl, and intent, there's another layer they say matters. According to investigators, around the same period of escalating financial stress, Corey Richens was involved in a romantic relationship outside of her marriage. Prosecutors allege she had a boyfriend. And I want to be careful here, because having an affair is not a crime. And being emotionally disconnected from your spouse is not murder. But in the state's narrative, this relationship becomes part of a broader picture they're trying to paint, one of separation, concealment, and forward planning. At the same time, there's the house, this multi-million dollar mansion that Corey is planning to flip. Prosecutors allege that Corey was deeply invested in flipping this property, which was a massive real estate project that required serious capital. They argue that the deal was financially overextended, that it relied on loans Eric allegedly didn't approve, and that it became a pressure point in the marriage. After Eric died, Corey ultimately sold the mansion. And that sale matters to the state because from their perspective, it looks like this. A strained marriage, secret loans, a massive property flip, a boyfriend waiting in the wings, a life insurance policy quietly reduced. Then suddenly, a husband is gone. Again, let me say this clearly. Real estate ambition is not homicide. Infidelity is not murder. Selling a house after your spouse dies does not make you a killer. But prosecutors aren't presenting these facts in isolation. They're stacking them up. They're asking a jury to see a trajectory, not just a moment. A woman they claim was already emotionally disconnected from her marriage, already financially overleveraged, already planning a next chapter. And then, according to the state, removing the obstacle standing in the way of that future. The defense, of course, sees this very differently. They argue the state is retroactively assigning meaning to ordinary, if messy, human behavior, that relationships are complicated, that real estate investors flip houses, that widows sell properties, that none of this proves poisoning. And this is one of the most dangerous spaces in any murder trial, where lifestyle evidence starts to blur into character judgment, where jurors are subtly invited to decide not just what someone did, but who they are. That's a line courts are supposed to protect fiercely, because criminal trials are not morality plays. They're supposed to be about evidence.
5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Just weeks before Eric's death, prosecutors alleged there was an earlier attempt. According to the probable cause affidavit, Eric becomes violently ill after a dinner prepared by Corey. He survived. The state describes this as a possible test run. That phrase is chilling, but legally it's volatile. Because introducing prior bad acts into a murder trial is never automatic. Defense attorneys have aggressively challenged whether this alleged February incident can even be presented to a jury. Under evidentiary rules, prior acts must clear serious hurdles. Are they relevant? Are they more probative than prejudicial? Are they truly evidence of intent or just character assassination dressed up as pattern? The prosecution argues the February illness demonstrates planning. The defense argues it's speculative, interpreted only after the fact, filtered through the knowledge of what happened later. And this pretrial fight matters enormously. If jurors hear she tried once before, the psychological weight of the case shifts. If they don't, the narrative narrows to a single night in March. And that single night is where everything turns. According to prosecutors, on March 3rd, 2022, Corey contacted a local drug dealer. Text messages allegedly reference obtaining fentanyl. The alleged dealer later cooperates with law enforcement, and this is where we slow down again. Cooperating witnesses are complicated. They often come with their own criminal exposure. Their testimony can be powerful and deeply contested. Defense attorneys will scrutinize any deals, any leniency, any incentive to shape a narrative that benefits the state. But prosecutors say digital evidence supports the timeline. Phone records, text messages, location data. That evening, Eric and Corey reportedly had a date night at home. She later tells police she made him a Moscow mule, vodka, ginger beer, and lime. At some point during the night, Eric becomes unresponsive. Corey calls 911.
911, what's the address of the emergency? My husband's not breathing. He's cold. Okay, what's the address? Okay, what's a good phone number in case it got disconnected? 611. 4587.
Okay, it's going to be in Francis. Okay, tell me exactly what happened.
I don't know.
I was with my kids. Okay, I can't understand you. I need you to take a deep breath. What's going on?
I don't know. I was sleeping in with my kids. I just came in the bed, in our bed, and I turned over. He's cold.
Who's cold?
My husband. I turned the light off.
And he's not breathing? I need you to confirm it for me. Is he not breathing?
No.
Okay, we're going to... Can you do CPR?
No.
You don't know? I'm going to tell you how to. Are you willing to do CPR?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm not breathing. He's cold.
Okay, what's the address?
First responders arrive. CPR is attempted. He is pronounced dead. The medical examiner later rules the cause of death a fentanyl overdose. Eric had no prescription, no known opioid dependency. And this is where the case tightens. Fentanyl does not appear spontaneously. Someone supplies it. Someone administers it. The prosecution theory is direct. She did both. The defense theory is just as clear. The state cannot prove how fentanyl entered Eric's system. Suspicion is not proof. Opportunity is not intent. And mechanism, delivery, administration, timing is everything in a homicide case. Months later, Corey Richens self-publishes a children's book titled Are You With Me? It's about a father who dies and continues to watch over his children. She promotes it locally. She speaks about grief. She frames it as something she wrote to help her sons cope with losing their dad. When she is arrested in May 2023, that book becomes headline fuel. The story practically writes itself. But here's the part that makes me uncomfortable, and I want to say this carefully. Writing about grief after losing a spouse is not evidence of murder. Public composure is not proof of guilt. We have to separate spectacle from substance.
5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Prosecutors may argue the book reflects consciousness of guilt, a kind of narrative staging. The defense will argue it reflects trauma and survival and a mother trying to stabilize her children's world. Jurors will have to sit inside that tension between optics and evidence. This case also includes additional financial charges, allegations of fraudulent loan applications, forged documents, misrepresentations tied to real estate ventures. Strategically, that matters. Financial crimes can establish a pattern of deception, but they also risk unfair prejudice. Expect motions to sever counts. Expect arguments over what jurors should and should not hear. Because the broader the character narrative becomes, the more dangerous it is inside of a courtroom. Pre-trial hearings have already focused on suppression issues, admissibility battles, digital evidence interpretation, and bail determinations. The defense has challenged chain of custody, extraction methods, the meaning of coded language in text messages. Digital evidence is powerful, but contextual. A phrase only means fentanyl if the jury believes it does. Texts can look damning in isolation. They can look ambiguous in context. And that's the battlefield. And if there's one thing I've learned covering cases like this, it's that public narratives move fast. Courtrooms move slowly. That slowness is not incompetence, it's protection. When I read this file, I kept thinking about how modern marriage is entangled with financial identity. property portfolios, credit lines, insurance beneficiaries, love becomes legally intertwined with liability. And when trust fractures, it fractures across spreadsheets. I also kept thinking about how quickly we collapse women into archetypes. Grieving widow, black widow, ambitious investor, fraudster, author, murderer. We flatten people into headlines. But juries are instructed not to do that. They are instructed to weigh proof, not vibes, not optics, not the emotional punch of a children's book. And I sit with that discomfort, because if she did this, the betrayal is devastating. But if she didn't, the narrative damage may be permanent. That is the knife edge this case rests on. Corey Richens has pleaded not guilty. She remains presumed innocent unless and until a jury says otherwise. The core question is not whether the story is shocking. It's whether the state can prove intent beyond a reasonable doubt. Fentanyl is deadly, but murder requires more than toxicity. It requires proof of human agency. This case sits at the intersection of money, marriage, and modern storytelling. It's about what we show publicly, what we hide privately, and what prosecutors believe happened in a bedroom in March 2022. The trial won't be about headlines. It'll be about toxicology reports, digital timestamps, witness credibility, insurance paperwork, the unglamorous machinery of proof. Here's where the case stands right now. The trial has officially begun. It's expected to last roughly 5 weeks with testimony that will include forensic evidence, digital records, financial documents, and cooperating witnesses. All of it finally being tested in front of a jury. This is the moment where theories meet transcripts, where headlines meet cross-examination, where narrative gives way to evidence. I'll be following every step. Over on Something's Off, I'll be doing daily trial recaps, breaking down testimony, motions, and key moments as they happen. And I'll also be streaming live coverage so we can sit with this case together in real time. Because trials aren't clean. They're messy. They're technical. They're slow. They're emotional. And they deserve to be watched carefully. So if you want the day-to-day courtroom reality, not just the big headlines, that's where you'll find me at Something's Off Pod on YouTube. As always, I'll stay in the documents, in the testimony, in the uncomfortable spaces between accusation and proof, because I'm Mel Barrett, and this is The In-Between. So I'll see you in court. P.S. Be good people. Don't do murder. The In-Between podcast is written, edited, and hosted by me, Mel Barrett, and is a production of Ruby Grace Productions. Special thanks to my mentors, Amber Hunt, Ellen Marsh, and Rebecca Lavoie for their super smart guidance and support. If you want ad-free exclusive content, bonuses, and lives, head on over to the In-Between Podcast Patreon and sign on up. The intern level starts at just $4, and there's over 100 ad-free episodes for you to binge right now. You can watch my new show, Something's Off, with Rebecca Lavoie over on YouTube at Something's Off Pod, or listen on Patreon. Episodes drop several times per week. And please tune in on Wednesdays at 7 p.m. Eastern to watch my new panel show, News Light, on YouTube, where we talk politics and the latest news affecting all of us. Stay tuned after this show for a teaser for News Light. And if you'd be so kind to like, comment, subscribe, rate, and all the things, it's super helpful for my shows and moves my content up in the algorithm. If you appreciate my work, please don't forget to tip on Venmo at Mel Barrett Writes. That's Barrett with two R's and two T's. Thanks for watching and listening. I appreciate the support so much. Hey, everyone. I'm Mel Barrett, and welcome to News Light. If you're here, thank you, truly, because choosing to spend part of your evening talking about politics in 2026 is, well, it's a bold choice. This show is loosely inspired by Abby Phillips' CNN panel show, News Night, whose tagline is, Americans with different perspectives aren't talking to one another. Here, they do. Mine's a little different, maybe a little more honest. Americans with different views aren't talking to one another. Here, they try, kinda. Because look, we're living in a moment where people don't just disagree. They block, they mute, they unfriend, they assume intent, they flatten each other into caricatures. And somewhere along the way, we forgot how to actually sit in discomfort long enough to listen. So that's what this space is for. It's not gotcha journalism. It's not viral dunking. It's not performative outrage. It's just real conversation. I come from investigative journalism and long-form storytelling. I care about facts. I care about sourcing. I care about power. I care about who gets hurt when narratives get sloppy. And I care about creating rooms where people can speak honestly without being shouted into silence. The goal here is to build towards something harder and more interesting, bringing in voices with different views, not to stage cage matches, but to have ethical, good faith debate. The kind that assumes humanity first. The kind that allows complexity. The kind that doesn't require anyone to become a meme. We're not here to win. We're here to understand what the hell is actually happening in this country and why. Some nights it'll be serious. Some nights it'll be messy. Some nights we'll laugh, because if we don't laugh, we're all going to need a group therapy punch card. But every night, we're going to try to be real. So, welcome to Newslight. We'll see you Wednesdays at 7 p.m. Eastern on YouTube at Newslight with Mel Barrett.